Welcome to the For the Reef podcast. Each week we bring our fish nerd conversations from the fish room floor to your living room. We try to bridge the gap between the saltwater aquarium hobby and coral reef conservation. Now, here are your hosts, fisheries biologist and founder of For the Reef Apparel, Mitch Dender, with local fish store owner and first responder, Ian Bell.
And we're back.
We are back.
Finally.
Live from lockdown.
This is it. Live from lockdown. Yeah.
Holy. For those of you who are not in Ontario, we are
worst case
stay-at-home order. So we're at home.
We are locked down like a fish with ick in quarantine. Yeah, it is. It's crazy over here. But, you know, some things are nice about being locked down. You get to kind of dial in your tank.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. You get to,
completed a move during this time.
Yeah.
Which was a real.
Just got under the wire with that one.
Yeah. I mean, that's so we really do intend on getting these podcasts out on a more frequent and scheduled basis. But it is entirely my fault. I've just been so busy with a move over the last, couple months and some renovations that we haven't been able to get these out as much as we want. But we're trying to get back on track now, and we're excited because we have a lot of great ideas and a lot of great people that we're looking forward to bringing onto this podcast. So we really, really appreciate everybody listening and some of the nice comments that we've gotten to say.
Yeah,
that
we've gotten some really great comments. We appreciate that.
Yeah. Podcasting is a weird thing because you just feel like you're just talking out cyberspace. And sometimes you completely forget that people actually might be listening to this.
Yeah. we feel like we're just talking to each other. And
yeah.
it's kind of the point.
Luckily I haven't said anything too incriminating yet, but we'll give it time.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, today we are going to be talking about my move and things that we learned about the move.
Some interesting things, some things that were unexpected, some things we did expect and fortunately we were prepared for.
Yep. And then we're also going to just touch on a few conservation topics to try and to continually learn as we go along. I think both Ian and I will admit, we're not experts on the conservation side and that sort of thing, but we're just as eager to learn as hopefully you guys are that are listening. So hopefully we can all just kind of learn what's going on out there in the oceans together.
Yeah.
The first thing, Ian, you want to explain kind of what's happening with the stony corals in the Cayman Islands?
Stony coral tissue loss disease, as they're calling it, has hit the north side of Cayman. I think we mentioned this in a previous episode. The alarm is now that it's starting to progress around to different areas of the island. As I understand it, the different dive operations and whatnot are taking precautions, extra gear cleaning and things like that. They're, all the things that can be done are being done. The problem is that nobody knows a whole lot about this disease and they're trying to figure out what it is, why it is, and how it's being caused. We understand that there's a couple of girls in the women, I should say, in Florida that are studying this. And I believe there's discussions back and forth between different things. But it's believed, as I understand it, to be bacterial and then maybe sort of exacerbated by parameter issues or heat or warning, sort of like if something's already delicate, anything like that makes it worse. So they're trying to figure out why it's there, where it's come from, and how to make it better. And I'm not sure how that's going just yet.
Yeah, so it looks like it's something that was kind of observed first in the Florida Keys, I think, in 2014, it's looking like. And basically what people are starting to think, as as you mentioned, Ian, was that this might be a bacterial issue. So, and it seems to be like it's a pathogen. So basically, yeah. You know, just from what I'm learning and as I'm kind of reading about this and trying to get myself caught up on what's going on over there without, you know, being there, you know, a bacterial pathogen could be, you know, bacteria that's in this area that previously wasn't. So a condition of climate change right now is that there's a lot of, there's a lot of changing currents out in the ocean, and there's water that's moving into areas that previously wasn't. There's warm currents that are pushing cold water into certain areas, and it's kind of changing where nutrients are showing up. It's changing where bacteria are showing up, and these types of foreign bacteria are now maybe potentially coming into areas. This is just all hypothetical because we don't know for sure, but that could be what's happening in Cayman right now, and originally in Florida. Is that these changing oceans is moving these different bacteria around the ocean. And then the corals that are there don't have that natural immune response to defend themselves from a foreign pathogen. Interesting notes about it is that it seems like it affects the pillar corals, the brain corals. You know, there's a whole gamut of different stony corals that are affected. It looks like it hits them at the base, works their way up and bands, and eventually, you know, causes the tissue to leave the coral and cause death. Sometimes it happens quickly. Sometimes it takes several weeks to months to, you know, really start to have its impacts on things. But one interesting point is that it doesn't seem to be affecting the two kind of iconic corals of the Caribbean, the Elkhorn coral and the Staghorn coral. So it's something to be said there. I don't know what the, you know, what the answers are. And the researchers that are out there, I'm sure they're really focusing on this issue, and hopefully sooner than later, we get some answers so that there can be some positive change.
Yeah, we'll have to reach out to the pair in Florida there that's doing the work and see if we can get them on and learn a little bit more about this. It's interesting, every time we have one of these articles comes up, it gives us another avenue of folks to speak to. There's really no end to it.
Yeah, for sure. And that's one of the greatest things about looking into this stuff is, you know, this is all new. Coral research is at such an adolescent stage that it's just like this hobby where it's like you just feel like you could never end with the possibilities that you can have in this hobby. And same goes with understanding coral reefs in the wild and understanding conservation. So it's really an area of research that I love to learn more about, and it'll be something to bring on some real experts to talk about this eventually.
Mm-hmm. We always talk about the Cayman Islands, and this is happening everywhere. It's not just the Cayman Islands, but since we work with the Ecodivers Reef Foundation and we support them and are trying to fundraise for them and whatever, this is sort of our base of operations. So that's, if you haven't been listening before, that's why we always speak about the Cayman Islands, because it's the one that we're connected to. We can get you the most information on, but this information is probably relevant to a lot of places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The other thing that's going on there, that we posted an article on our Facebook the other day, was they've done some studies. The Central Caribbean Marine Institute's been doing studies on what has been going on with the reefs since COVID started. A lot less boats around, a lot less divers in the water, and it's been quite interesting.
Yeah, and so this was actually a study that was set up a long time ago, as far as I know. And it was basically a effort to put out, I think they're at about 230 hydrophones into the ocean right now to capture acoustics that are going on in the water. So there's a lot of reasons why they do that. It's hard to go back to many periods in time where the oceans surrounding the Cayman Islands, for example, got quiet enough where you could see some real changes in the way that the, you know, the ecosystem's functioning.
For people that don't know why that's relevant, fish are, they're able to hear, they're reactive to sound just like anybody else is. And there's a lot of talk about noise from land in the oceans and how that affects spawning and fish levels and all sorts of things, their ability to communicate with each other. That's why this is relevant.
Yeah, the way that they hear, sometimes the hearing can come from, you know, your same ideas coming from, what's it called? I'm forgetting what the bone is called. There's the floating bone inside fish's brains and that vibrates and it helps with them hearing. So there's that kind of hearing. And then of course, fish also have a lateral line, and along that lateral line, they're literally physically feeling that noise as it reverberates through the water, and they can use that to signal each other in school. They can use that to identify predators, and they can even, one of the other big things in regards to like coral reefs is larvae and small fish and things like that. There's studies that suggest that they'll use the sounds of the reef to find where the reefs are. So noise plays a really critical role in the ocean. And when there's a lot of so-called noise pollution from boat traffic and human traffic and all that kind of stuff, then it disrupts, it creates a lot of background noise that can disrupt these natural functions of so-called noise under the water.
And I found when diving that noise travels a lot more than you think it would underwater. And if I get disoriented by it as a diver, you could see easily how animals and fish could get disoriented by it. There's a couple dive spots I go to in Cayman. It's very close to where the cruise ships dock. One of those things turns on, you think it's right on top of you.
Yeah.
And it's, a fair distance away. It's not not unreasonable to think that this definitely has a really big impact.
Yeah, like you would think, you see videos on the internet or on TV of people scuba diving and you think it's so quiet and peaceful and, but a lot of times when you're diving, it's noisy. And
yeah.
There's, especially over really, really diverse reefs, you'll hear a lot of noises that are coming from corals and vertebrates and fish, you name it. So it's a pretty noisy place. It reminds me actually of a study that I got to kind of be involved in. I helped a little bit with them doing this work, but it was near in aquaculture. They would set up acoustic monitors underwater to listen for noises and how they impact the fish behavior. So if you think salmon aquaculture in British Columbia, and different marine mammals that are swimming potentially, 50 miles away.
Right.
They're being picked up through these acoustic monitors, and then there's cameras in the sea pens, and you can watch the change in the behavior of fish.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so they would, salmon would swim in different styles. They would go from kind of shoals, where they're all kind of doing their own thing, but they're still kind of together, versus tight schools. They'll speed up their spinning, their swimming sometimes, depending on what the noises that are coming into the acoustic monitors. They'll even go to different depths. They'll swim deeper or come more shallow depending on what noises they're hearing. So yeah, it's really interesting. And basically just to summarize that study, as much as I know about it, is from the Cayman Islands. And they think obviously as a result of COVID, that reduction in noise, they made some big claims in the quick article that I was reading. So I'd have to dig deeper to see like what the actual study said and, the way the stats actually showed it, because this seems kind of like anecdotal, but
it's a brief article. We'll post these articles in the links so you guys can check them out.
Yeah. So they mentioned, increased density, increased biomass, increased predators. What level of those increased, I'd have to look at the paper, but nonetheless, I mean, as you expect, there'd be a positive effect of less noise. But
depending on where the dive sites are that they checked on the island too, being a little bit familiar with it, mm-hmm. it would be easy to notice probably, I mean, I don't live there, but for me, it would be easy to probably to notice in some of the predators because, for example, sharks and stuff tend to be on the north and east side of the island. So if you start to see more of them coming around the west and the south, that would probably be fairly easy to notice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So they're pretty cool. We'll keep following along with what comes out about those as we learn more. And
we'll try and get some people that actually know about this firsthand and bring them on here if we can.
Yeah. So I have a on this topic, Higgs, Dr. Higgs, University of Windsor. He does this stuff. He works a lot with understanding noise and hearing underwater of fish and different things like that. And he's a really, really awesome, passionate guy. And it would be really cool to have him come on to talk about it from a freshwater side and a saltwater side, I guess. But of course, we can think of all the other researchers that are out there in the Cayman Islands and Florida. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's lots of people who are interested in this thing. So cool to bring some people on.
Yeah.
So then getting into, the meat and potatoes of the...
Today's topic.
Yep, today's topic.
Pretty soon I'll have intros for this stuff. I'm working on it, but for now you get Mitch.
Today's topic. So we're going to talk about the lockdown. The move during the lockdown. Move.
We've done a couple episodes on prepping for lockdown. Now you got me saying it. Prepping for moves and lockdown. What to think about and all that. And since that time, Mitch has now moved and that move is complete, as well as that customer that I spoke about from the East Coast. She has now moved as well.
Oh, interesting.
So we got a little information I can pass along there as well. So this will sort of be our wrap up on moving, what we talked about as compared to what actually happened.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. One of the funniest things that I think happened was,
I think I know where you're going.
I mean, I literally talked about a move and contingency and doing things properly and, keeping everything, having backups for your backups and all that kind of stuff. We talked about it on the podcast. It's what I recommend to people. But when it came time to move, I feel like I was like, I don't know how the best way to describe it. It was like I was a little shell shocked or something.
The word hot mess comes to mind.
Yeah, that's true. It's definitely a hot mess.
What we maybe left out or didn't touch on enough in those episodes was stress.
Yeah.
And the closer that it got and the more things were happening and work-life balance and planning that needed to happen and, getting his moves and things like that, the more stressed poor Mitch looked.
Yeah.
And he came into the shop one day to talk to us and we're like, okay, time for an intervention. This boy's going to have a hard deck.
Oh, yeah.
And just, I think what we sort of maybe undersold or underestimated in these moves is the stress of moving. And it's not just the move and it's not just planning when to do it. It's, there's renovations going on. Are they going well? Is this happening? Is there a lockdown happening? Are we worried about who can access what? There's a lot of extra external factors that we maybe didn't give enough weight to. And it's funny that as much as I'm poking fun at Mitch, like I always do, it's not just Mitch. The same thing happened with my client from the East Coast. She came in one day with her partner and her friend and was about ready to shut things down. And it was the same thing. They're moving a long distance. There's a lot going on. Renovations are going on. They're worried about dirt and dust and things were not as running as smooth as I'd like. And she was not in a good way. Mm-hmm. And it was sort of a very similar thing to you. It reminded me of that after when I was speaking to her. We sort of needed to, have a calming conversation, take a step back, and sort of break things down to make it less overwhelming.
Yeah.
I think this is a thing that's left out of the conversation. It's not not just the logistics and the physical acts, it's the stress involved. And I think the key to both of those situations was neither one of you was trying to do it alone. Mm-hmm. You had somebody else who knew the plan, who knew what was going on, who was able to sort of go, okay, this is what we're going to do. And then we sort of step by step worked our way through it.
Yeah. I mean, without you guys, it would have went differently. I can guarantee it. So from my view, you know, I had for those listening, I did a full kitchen renovation. I was putting new doors on. I had a fireplace thing. I had to do a new bathroom. I started a new job. So, you know, I would go from wearing a dust mask all day, demolition and ordering things in and dealing with different contractors, going into work for a new job, come home and then think, oh my God, I still have that reef tank that's sitting up in London. And, oh my, you know, my wife's going to have to come down soon and she's going to be away from the tank. And we got to figure it, you know, it, and one of the best things that ever could have happened was I was starting to have a little bit of a freak out and I'm writing everything down like I normally do and breaking things down to the best I can, but I'm going 10 steps ahead of myself on every single thing.
Yeah.
So then I picked up the phone, I called you and you said, well, Mitch, don't worry about any other stuff. Get the plumbing installed.
Yep.
And when, so I put my reef tank on the main floor of my house and then the sump and everything like that was downstairs in a furnace room. It was about, call it 18 feet horizontally away. And I had to get the sump up to the tank, which was like 10 feet vertical. So yep. We had a lot of pipe to put in. I had to drill a couple big holes into my new floors in my new house and put some big 1.5-inch pipes downstairs across my basement. Figure out, you know, all that kind of stuff to get it over to the sump. But just from you saying, like, well, that is a big task on its own. Just saying, Mitch, just worry about the plumbing and then we'll get the rest. Then we'll take another step. That allowed me to focus in, think about just achieve this one thing and then clear the slate, look what's next. It made a huge difference.
Yeah, we were trying to sort of, it was the same with my client from the East Coast too. Overwhelmed, thinking about how to set up her new tank, which we haven't even got yet, that she's thinking about how are we going to travel? How are we going to do this? How are we going to do that? There's construction going. Same thing, roll it back. You can't do it all at once. It's something I've learned from one of the guys that helps me is he's really good at project management. One task at a time, get that sorted out and then move on to the next one. And it really does work. But in your situation, the more we could do ahead of time was going to help us on the day of the move. And with you having to drill holes through walls and run that pipe and stuff because of the fish room being, you know, like you said, 18 feet or so away from where it actually comes up in your office there, that was a big task on its own. And having that done enabled us to, on the day of the move, drop the tank on, hook it up, drop the sump in, hook it up. And it made it incredibly easy because most of the work was already done.
For sure. And, you know, even another, you know, a couple other little things, you know, one day I came into the shop and we're talking about, how am I going to get the ATO set up? And I got to get the mixers down here and I got to get, how am I going to know if my pump's going to do it? Because my Core 20 that I was using at the time, it was right on the verge of, you know, it's probably going to make it, but might not. And
he's talking about head pressure and things like that because there's some twists and turns and rises and things.
Yeah.
And so shouts out to CJ and Jay Wilson on that one. He helped us out picking a pump and give us some information on figuring that out, and it worked amazing. Yeah,
and I'm embarrassed which one it is right now.
I believe it was the high flow 10.
Is there one called 12?
Or 12. It was the one in the middle. Anyways, it's doing awesome. Like we had a lot more pressure than we expected by the time we were done.
I haven't figured out the turnover of my tank right now, but it's really great. Like, that pump, and just to be able to just, you know, glue the plumbing in, set the pump up and flick it on and have no leaks and have the pump just firing up into the, when we did our water test, that was just like a huge sigh of relief. Like, yeah, okay.
It was a one-shot deal. Nothing leaked. Everything worked.
Yeah. We and here's another great reason, right? Whether it's you go to Ian or you talk to your, you know, your local fish buddy, or you go into your local fish store and you talk to those guys, talk to somebody about this stuff, because I would have been wrong to keep the pump that I had. And equipment aside, money aside, blah, 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 the right call was to get the pump that I needed with some wiggle room in case things go wrong, have a backup. We said this 30 times during the podcast. And then when it came time to be being like, okay, I got to get the right pump. Well, which pump do I need? I'm looking at 100 different types of pumps. I just go to you. You say, this is the pump you need. We look at the math really quick. You're right. Pulled the trigger on the pump, and it saved the day. Because if that wouldn't have, but that's another emotional thing. I mean, if I wouldn't have been so stressed out from the whole move, I would have said, yeah, this is a no brainer. I mean, I know which pump I need to get, but having 3,000 things on my plate at the time, I couldn't wrap my head around which pump I need to get.
And it goes back to what we were talking about before. I think that's a key thing missing in a lot of these moving conversations. It's easy to rationalize and say, yeah, you just need to do this. The missing factor in all of those is all the additional stresses that you haven't yet thought about or experienced that come up. Because I know you know all this. And I said, well, Mitch, we talked about this in the podcast. You're like, dude, I don't remember anything we said.
And then, you know, the other critical thing that was said, and again, it was so weird because I've moved tanks before and I've done this exact thing before. And for some reason, my brain was thinking, oh, we're moving the tank. I've got to move all the livestock, right? How are we going to, I'm worried about how many buckets of salt am I going to have, or salt water with the corals? And then how am I going to set up heaters and bubblers so that they'd be okay if something's wrong with the tank? And I don't know why I had to have one of you guys say it, but you did. And it was like a duh moment. So what I ended up doing was I borrowed from our friend the rubber vat. It was like a rubberized, I don't know what you call those.
Yeah, it's like I had some feeding troughs.
Yeah.
That you get from the, you know, farm supply store or something. I have a couple that I keep around in the storage room for events like this.
Yeah, it's like a big, you know, rubberized
bin. 50, 75 gallons.
Right. So what I did is took that home, you know, and actually quote what you said. You said, bitch, this is what you do. Go grab that bin. stop at the store, buy some flowers, go home, give them to your wife, tell her you love her, and put this in the basement.
That sounds like something I would say. We had to do, you know, you got to consider the partner in the marriage when you're doing things like this. She's getting ready to move and you're putting a 50 gallon bin in the basement.
Like we had oh man, bless her heart, but we had garbage bags and bins that were packed away, and, you know, desks, and I'm on the phone with the moving guys who are going to come help, and we got like everything ripped to shreds and more work than you can imagine to get the house ready to go, because we want to have everything organized for when the guys get here to move it. And and here I am, you know, sucking on the end of a tube trying to get a siphon so I can pull water from my tank and put it into and to give people an idea, this looks like a pond. Like, I put a pond in my basement, basically. A temporary pond. But doing that, so all I did was I siphoned out water from my tank, put it into this, you know, mini vat, took the rocks that had corals first, put them in there. Then took the rocks that didn't have corals, kind of bundled them up in a corner just to keep them alive in the water, but not necessarily, you know, like exposed to light or anything. And then quickly caught my fish, put them in there, put some covers over the vat. I actually had a backup hang-on skimmer that I put on there with a power head and heater. And bam, just like that, all of a sudden, now I can break down my entire tank.
Yeah.
So that on moving day, we don't have to worry about livestock. We're just going to move the equipment.
And the reason that came about was because he was ready to, he was like trying to figure out how he was going to get all this water and get it down there and what he was going to do with the fish. And and you know, in amongst all the other things he was trying to accomplish, and we sort of had to slow the whole thing down and go, okay, you don't have to have everything down there. You're lucky enough. It's not one of those, my rent's done and I got to be out here by the first because the next person's moving in. You had time. So we took that stress out of the equation, as we spoke about before in other episodes, by creating an environment for the fish there. Now everything slows down. Now he was able to completely disassemble everything. Now we have, the big reason for it was to give ourselves breathing room on the other hand in case something went wrong. In case something didn't work, in case the plumbing leaked, in case the floor caved in, like who knows what happens, right? But this way, the livestock was fine.
Until
we were ready.
And looking back, that was the most important thing of the whole shebang. The second that I had those fish and corals in a spot where I was thinking I didn't need to move these guys for a while, it completely changed the entire move to be, took the stress off of me. That I would say, looking back now, I would say it's the number one thing that you should consider. I mean, like, what are you going to do? If you can, do you have a place where you can keep those fish, whether it's a buddy's house or a temporary tank or something like that? Or can you leave them where they're at and set up a new system? It is by far, in my point of view for this move, it was by far the most important thing.
Yeah, I think so, because it took a pressure off of all of us. There was no rush. Like, we didn't know. I mean, where Mitch moved to is 2 hours away from where I am, which is not, you know, the end of the world. But if you have to drive back and forth or something goes wrong, you know, it can be an issue. And it was, I believe, a holiday weekend when we did it.
It was Good Friday.
It was Good Friday. And we, you know, you don't know what could go wrong. And the last thing we wanted to see was something happen. And now we're forced to be on a overnight mission or build or running for God knows where to find parts, because we've got to get these fish back in some sort of life support. So it was definitely a key factor for
major.
Us.
Yeah, it was major. And then I can't even say this enough. I mean, the amount of help that you guys were, it was crazy. I mean, it was like, we got started on that build downstairs in the fish room, you know, fine tuned machine. You guys ripped through it, had everything all set up. We added some new equipment, a couple more bells and whistles to the system. And now I'm more happy with this hobby than I think I've ever been in my entire life. I feel like I have this dream reef tank. You know, sure, there's things that I changed. There's little things about the tank size. It would be 10,000 gallons if it was up to me. But as far as, you know, this system is like a dream to me, because I go down into that fish room now and it's like the fish lab.
It went really well. Like, the day started out well, as I expected. There's always problems, right? And so very first thing was, like, Mitch had the tank and the stand down there, and because of work commitments and stuff, he wasn't able to come up and get it. So we were going to bring it down for him. No problem. I'll hook the trailer onto my van and we'll go get it. Well, it took me an hour trying to get the trailer lights to work on the trailer. And if anybody owns a trailer out there, you know how much of a pain in the butt that can be. And I finally had to give up on it because I couldn't do it and time was ticking away and whatnot. So we ended up, we were able to get it in a pickup truck and bring it down, but there's an hour gone. Then we had to gather some things, some supplies together and whatnot. Now it's more time, and Mitch is calling me, hey, you guys aren't at my house yet, is everything okay? And Kelly's concerned. And we finally got over there, we got it out of the house. Once it was in the truck, then everything started to tick along. But these are the unforeseen issues that can come up if you don't build in these contingencies for the livestock. Then when we got down there, we had a pretty easy time getting it in the house. It wasn't that bad. We had a plan. You think it through first and then enact it. Having the proper gear to do it makes it a lot easier rather than just trying to manhandle it. We were fortunate enough to have suction cups meant for glass. If you don't have any, maybe you can rent some from a moving company or glass company, or buy some on Amazon. They're not expensive. Makes it a lot easier to handle. And we had some simple dollies, flat dollies with wheels on the bottom to help move it around the house. Now, you're not trying to hold this fairly heavy, awkward piece of equipment in the air. You can wheel it around and just lift it when it needs to. Saves your back, saves your time, saves your frustration.
Yeah. Yeah. That was awesome. The other thing that I wasn't thinking about, you know, when planning it in my head was just the, you know, like that tank was set up for 3 years, you know, in a, as a, you know, high SPS tank, you know, with the equipment underneath the tank. And now I can say, like, without question that there's some neglect that happens when your equipment's under the tank compared to
sure. The harder it is, the more likely you are to let things slide or that's good enough or I'm not that worried about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Like in the first 6 months, year, maybe. Yeah, sure. You'll do whatever you got to do under that tank. But after a while, if it's not easy, it's not getting done, especially on a regular basis. And especially when life gets busy. Mm-hmm. So anyway, when I was breaking down that system, right, like there was salt creep on a lot of stuff. There was lots of crawlies and, you know, gross stuff that's accumulated in that tank over time, critters, you know, and everything's just dying. And, you know, like as you know, you have all the bristle worms and the gunk and all that stuff, right? It all stinks. And it gave me a chance. It took me about probably 5-6 hours to break down that tank, try to clean things as best as possible. I used a shop vac. I vacuumed out all the sand. I threw all the sand away. I originally had the intention on saving the sand. Yeah, right. Like the second I vacuumed it out, I'm like, okay, it's not worth it to save the sand. Especially I actually happened to have a whole nother bucket of sand that I already rinsed off and was ready to go from another tank that I broke down. So that got the sand out of there. But then, you know, the whole tank's covered in coralline algae, like the whole back of it's covered in coral algae. And of course, I'm setting up this tank in its new spot. I want to give the tank, you know, a good scrape, clean all the coralline off, try to get some of these creepy crawlies out of here and, you know, clean the tank properly. And if you were trying to do this all on the same day where you take the livestock on the same day as the build, you're not going to have time to do these little things like.
No. And that was a big part of our discussion the day that you were having your breakdown was we could have spent most of the day just tearing the tank out and getting the fish inhabitants out of it and then had to drive down to where you are. And then that would have been.
Yeah. And it was already horrific. Like an 8-hour day for you guys.
You know what? I thought the day went really well. Like we left Mitch's other house, what, around 10 o'clock?
Mm-hmm.
And we were back on the road to London by 5:30 with everything hooked up, Apex running, new equipment added, no leaks, and a freshwater test done. Like it couldn't have gone better, but that's because we had planned ahead. Certain things had already been done and we had a system ready and everybody knew what that was going to be. And I think that, again, it goes back to don't do this alone. We all have buddies in the hobby. Engage your buddies so that they know the plan, so that they go, well, I thought we were going to do this, you know, have somebody to sort of help you reset and keep your mind on the task and the plan.
Yeah.
I think that was something we both learned was more valuable than we realized.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And then to move the fish. So this whole time, right. So now I set up, I got a new RODI system. I had the old aquatic life twist in one, which, you know, for a long time was working for the systems that I had, but I knew it was time to upgrade. I wanted to be able to produce RO water faster and have something a little more proper for the size of system that I had. So I upgraded my RO system. So while my wife was up in London, she still had the old RO unit up there so she could make RO water if she needed it. She didn't end up needing to because we had enough kind of stored up there. But then I could set up the new RO system on the tank that we just set up down in my new house and start to create the RO water. So to mean just to fill the tank with RO, it was probably 2-3 days before the tank was completely filled with RO water. And then I forget that I have a Hanna checker for salinity and temp. And of course I forgot it in London. So I'm eyeballing it. You go off the number of cups, blah, blah, blah. And you kind of guess what your salt's going to be and you get it in there. But at least, you know, over the course of a week, I could, go get another. I just got one of those cheap hydrometers, you know, from the pet store here in town because I just wanted to have something to check what the Slinny was going to be. It was close, but you know, all these little things that happen with the livestock stuff, because you need to get yourself all dialed in. And then on top of it, I mean, just getting, you get the salt all mixed up, you have the sand kind of settling out, you know, there's a lot of time that goes by of heating up the tank, right? I had two heaters in the tank. It still took like 3 days for the tank to get up to temperature. Mm-hmm. So then I waited until it was about, I had about 5 full days where the tank was just running without any issues. The whole system's running good. The apex is set up, blah, 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 blah. And then I'm like, okay, I'll shoot up and I'll go grip these fish. The way that I did it for fish and corals worked out pretty well. Can't complain. I had a couple coolers, some big deep coolers. And then I had styrofoam boxes, you know, like the styrofoam boxes that you ship fish in. I borrowed some of those from Ian, that he receives a ton of those from him, you know, ordering fish in and everything. So I ended up getting almost all of my corals into the deep coolers, filled them basically up with water. They weren't as heavy as I thought they were. And then I bought a whole bunch of bubble wrap, like sheets of bubble wrap. And I just shoved bubble wrap around the corals so that they couldn't bang around. Fish went into two separate buckets, sealed lids. I wanted to make sure that as the oxygen levels went down, as the ammonia levels went up, that the oxygen level went down as well, so that we weren't going to get a big ammonia spike as the pH. We talked about this before, but basically when you have a sealed container, that if the fish are pooping and everything in there, but the oxygen's coming down and the pH comes down, when pH is in those lower levels, ammonia doesn't become toxic. It's only when you open up that bucket after long shipping that pH and the oxygen goes up, which brings the ammonia up into these toxic, where it kind of activates the ammonia, but it becomes more toxic to the fish. So I wanted to make sure that the buckets were sealed. So I had 5 fish in each bucket, 10 fish total. And then live rock that didn't have corals on it went into the styrofoam boxes with wet newspaper. Me and my wife were able to handle that, no problem. I put everything into the coolers. We just carried them out, you know, together, put them into the back of the truck and drained down the tank, and off I went and got them back into town. It was late. Called one of my buddies who was in town. I said, hey, can you help me for 10 minutes? Just need to unload some corals and fish. After he made fun of me for 2 hours.
Is this your same buddy that thinks you keep, what was it saying? He was talking about keeping rock or.
Oh no, Johnny. No, he always, he's known me my whole life, but he always says that I clean rocks. He's like, you know, you like rinse off aquarium rocks. He thinks that's all we do. And then it was another one of my buddies that he's setting up a pond and stuff right now. So he's, I did some work for him for his pond, so he owed me the favor anyway. So he shot over and lifted them into the house, and I just started dropping the corals in. I had, you know, I had a whole bunch of frags because the corals were big, and in the cooler, you know, with even with the bumping around and the bubble wrap, some corals did break off. I had, you know, little frags around, not a crazy amount. The only death I saw was when one of my bigger colonies from Australia, the center part of it, it had kind of like one arm of it that completely died. And who knows why, it could have just been wrapped too tight with bubble wrap. It could have been sitting out of the water during shipping. I'm not sure. But overall, I mean, there's probably 100 different individual corals in the tank. And some colonies that are 6-8 inches wide, that's pretty good.
I'm looking at Mitch's tank behind him right now, and all I see happy fish and happy corals. So I think that we'd call this success if that's the only casualty.
Yeah, no, it was a huge success. And so there was this other thing that I realized during this move. It's kind of funny. So tanks nowadays, you know, and there's a lot of reasons, everybody has their different preferences. tanks nowadays, the rock that we're getting, they're cut in certain ways so they can stack properly and all that kind of thing. And over time, the corals will grow over them and they'll look more natural. But I felt like the design that I had at my old house, where I had these like towers that were cemented together and I made grooves and peaks and all of this weird stuff, it looked cool and it was functional because the water could get around the rocks and everything. But what I've realized is that I really, really like, and it's kind of like obnoxious to say it this way, but I've been in this hobby long enough where, you know, there is a lot of money in corals that I have in here, and the corals are healthy and they grow into each other and they break apart, but I don't really care because they're really abundant in there. And that's not because I just went out and I have tons of money and I just went and bought a million corals. It's because I've been in this hobby so long that I just have grown these corals out. And, you know, I've done trades and all kinds of stuff like that. But one thing that I really have realized is that I really like a natural reef look. Mm-hmm. So it looks more like, well, it looks less structured. I have less perfect corners and grooves and perfect tunnels and stuff like that. And what I actually have right now is a whole lot of corals that are literally growing into each other. I have corals placed on top of each other. And watching nature in this aquarium now has been so cool because the corals are deciding what this tank looks like. And it's and the other thing that's crazy, okay, so I've got to ramble because I'm looking at my tank and I'm getting all excited about my tank now. So I have three Bangai cardinal fish in here. Two of them I bred, one of them was a buy. I'm not sure which one it is that doesn't do well, but there's one that gets beat up on. And in my old tank, he used to get beat up on constantly. And I think it was because he didn't have, like in this tank now, because of this more natural look, there's a billion hiding places. And I might lose on the flow getting around all the rocks. I might struggle more with getting flow through the rocks. I might struggle more with coral placement for new corals, all that sort of thing. But this guy, he's come right back to life. Like he's healed right up. The diversity and the structure and the randomness that's in the tank, I think is really healthy for the fish as well. So it's kind of kind of cool. It's the other big thing is the noise. So when I was at my old house, the tank was in the basement. So one, it got very little natural light. Now I open these windows, you know, and I know there's not direct light on these tanks, but there's a ton of daylight that can come into this room when I want it to. And the way that the fish react to the light is really cool. It's like they really appreciate it. And you get a different view of the tank under natural daylight. Mm-hmm. And that was something that was missing from having my tank in the basement. Where the other thing too is the filtration. So
yeah,
now
that was something we put thought right into as we were putting it back together.
Yeah, like the noise in this room is so quiet and so peaceful.
Yep.
That it really changes the whole viewing experience for me. It's not chaotic. It doesn't feel a little bit.
You're not distracted by what's going on in the filter. Do I need to look at this filter sock? Blah, 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 blah. You're just enjoying the tank.
Well, and the way that people respond to this tank now, people walk in and everybody thought it was cool when they'd see it in my basement. And, you know, they feel a little bit overwhelmed by it, mm-hmm. I think. Where now, like, people come look at this and they're like, so intrigued, their eyes are lighting up, they're looking closely, they're like blown away by the colors, they're paying attention to all these things, they're not distracted by all of the other stuff that goes along with having a reef tank. This is just the display, and it's perfect in every way, and I love it.
Mm-hmm. We put a lot of thought into, because where his fish room is, there's a living room down there as well, next to it. Mm-hmm. And we didn't want it to be noisy. And anytime you hard plumb, I think we talked about this once before, if you hard plumb something directly into a pump, there's going to be vibration through that pipe. And that pipe now runs right through this living room over to his office. So we took Jay's advice, as, and I've done this once before too, and it makes it, and we put a soft loop in the plumbing structure to take the noise away, and it did a really great job.
Yeah, so like what he means is it off the pump, there's a little bit of hard PVC to get the peak, to get it up out of the water, and then there's a big old ring of braided vinyl tubing. It's 1.5-inch vinyl tubing. It has like a big loop, and definitely reduce the noise. All of the noise now is down in the furnace room, where I have some acoustic pads that are in there as well to kind of help even more. You can barely even, when the door's closed, you can't hear it. But in the display now, there is like barely any noise at all. And one thing that's hilarious is that I have this tank set up for 4 years in my basement, and I set the tank up here, and I'm like, oh my God, that's so loud. Like, there's so much splashing going on. Why is the water was falling into this. So I have a center overflow. So the overflow sits like in the traditional style, where there's a big tower in the middle of the tank. The water flows into there. It reaches a point where it then falls down the drain pipe, and it's called the Dorsey drain pipe, where there's a turn at the top and there's a little hole at the top of the turn. So basically it doesn't create a siphon, and it's supposed to be quieter. But my Dorsey pipe, my drain pipe, was about 4 or 5 inches below where the little teeth are on the overflow. Mm-hmm. So when the water was flowing through the overflow.
Yeah, it wasn't your drain. It was the fall into the overflow itself.
Yeah. So it was just falling through the overflow, and it was making all kinds of noise. And I'm like, this is so crazy. And automatically I'm like, oh, well, this is an easy fix. I just add some more height to my drain pipe, and now it won't fall. Do that change, and it's perfectly quiet. The funniest part is, though, is it was like that in my basement for 4 years, but yeah. Everything else was so loud down there I didn't even notice. Yeah, like yeah. I was listening to protein skimmers and return pumps and mm-hmm. all the other stuff, that it didn't even faze me that the overflow was making that much noise. So
the one other thing that as we were putting things together that did come into play, as we talked about in the previous episodes, was having extra parts.
Yeah,
we had extra plumbing parts. We had extra stuff and we brought extra electronics. We had, I brought more stuff with me from the shop just because it was a holiday, and if we couldn't get it, and a couple of things did end up not working, and we were able to fix it on the fly and keep moving. And it was because we were prepared for it. We were lucky that, you know, I had the ability to bring it with me. But if it had been, you know, if you don't have that luxury, just talk to your local fish store, going like, hey man, are you around this day? I'm moving. If I get into trouble, can I call you, or call your buddy? Does he have some extra stuff in his basement? Like, but have that contingency, because it did come into effect, and we were prepared for it.
Yeah. All the way from the little plumbing stuff to, the vinyl tubing and then the clamps and all of that little stuff.
Yep.
But then all the way to, I had an energy bar, an Apex EV, what is it called again?
EV832
is like your the energy bar that comes with the Apex. I had one that was on my old system, but salt, I think has got into it a bit. And when we tried to set it up, nothing was working. And I'm like, well, the only thing I can think of is maybe there's something wrong with my energy bar. We swapped it out because you guys brought one. All of a sudden, everything's working. So. Yep. I mean, if you think in worst case scenarios, if we would have had that energy bar there, we would have been, you know, messing around with that filter and all the gears and everything, trying to figure out what the heck's going on. Mm-hmm. And we would have never been able to isolate that it was the energy bar and get the system running. So, yeah, that was the stars aligned thing. We got really, really lucky with the trickle trunk or whatever. the little basket of help that was brought. We had some plumbing parts that were brought along for the trip. And it was a side of a union. I was missing one side of a union. We dug through some old stuff. And
luckily, one of our pails, we happen to have one.
Lucky to have one. Yeah, it was great. So
yeah, but it was the pre-planning that made it great.
Absolutely.
And that was the key, and doing it as a team, not just trying to do it all yourself, and sharing the plan and just prep was the key. Absolutely. And now I'm looking at a beautiful tank.
Yeah.
Couldn't have gone better, I don't think.
I love it. My wife loves it.
That's what really matters, right? Did you buy her the flowers? That's what everybody wants to know.
No, it's a lockdown.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. No, it's absolutely perfect. The only problem is
successful day.
I can never move from this house. I'll have to come here
The payback for us was in some fun because we have access to Mitch's Apex now remotely, and we're 2 or 3 days after. I'm like, Mitch, there's no pump flowing yet. Mitch, why isn't there water in there yet?
Yeah. I mean, that even worked out even today because I had some issues with the programming and the solenoid, and I got some help remotely, which was nice.
Yeah.
But the only other notable thing that has parked, you know, popped up. And luckily, this is the only pest I'm talking about. But the old Aptasia sure found their way to find new ground during this move. Because they are all over. And again, they don't bother me that much. I've got this new perspective, you know, with reef tanks that I've kind of developed over time. And I like this natural look, and I really like it. But you know, there's a few corals in there. The Aptasias are taking ground from, and I think it's time to start battling back. So I think I'm going to go the route of hitting them with some kelp paste, and then
I got F Aptasia at the store. It works amazing. I'll get you some.
Yeah. Like I think it's going to be a combination of hitting them manually, and then I was looking at all the different, you know, biological controls, and I think I have wrasse in here. I have a hawkfish. I've been wanting to try and breed peppermint shrimp. So this might be the time to try and breed peppermint shrimp and get some peppermint shrimp in here also to try and get the Aptasia. I think that the fish will eat peppermint shrimp, especially if they're smaller. So this is going to be a battle that goes on for a little while, but, you know, it's all part of fun.
Mm-hmm.
So
no, I think it was a success overall. And, you know, we know we'd done a couple episodes on this, but we thought we should wrap it up with, you know, what actually happened and what did we run into, just to sort of close it out and complete it for everybody.
Yep. For sure.
So, you know, in the long run, the tank is there. It looks beautiful. Nothing's leaked. Mitch is still married. He still has all his brain cells. Everything's good.
I don't know about the last one. my back's a little more sore and I feel humbled, but the product is complete, or however you want to say it.
Well, and now we can share that with everybody, and hopefully that will translate into other people having an easier time.
Oh yeah, for sure. So, all right. I think that kind of wraps up the move.
Yeah.
If there's anybody out there in cyberspace that has some questions about the move, you know where you guys can find us. If you like this podcast, we appreciate any you know, comments and things like that.
The whole like and subscribe thing. Like, subscribe, subscribe. We're working on getting things set up, and so we'll be on YouTube soon too. You get to look at our ugly mugs.
Yeah, we are on YouTube right now, and just kind of the audio
in
version
audio
is
format,
on.
Yeah.
I know personally, you know, sometimes when I'm working or whatever, I like to just have it playing through YouTube. You know, so we're on there. But that's about it. And till next time, I think we're on to something here, and we're
enjoying doing it. Now that we get the stress of this move over for Mitch, we're going to try and be a little bit more regular about it, but you know, COVID happens, moves happen, and we do the best we can. That's why we don't promise a specific day when this comes out. We just have to sort of flex with it.
Yeah. There's something you guys want to hear on here, a certain topic, a certain guest. If you want to complain about the noise quality or anything like that, then
we're learning.
Feel free. So
yeah.
Appreciate it. So till next time. Okay.
See you next time.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the For the Reef podcast. As always, you can reach us at ForTheReefPodcast@gmail.com or via our websites, ForTheReef.com or SustainableMarineCanada.ca. If you would like to get involved and help the reef restoration efforts, check out our friends at CaymanEcoDivers.com. We hope you enjoyed today's podcast. Please hit subscribe and join us for the next episode coming soon.